The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Call Tim Vaughn at 216-525-1818. 525-1818.
Thank you for finally noticing.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Welcome indeed. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on a Monday. It's the 11th morning of the third month in the year of our Lord 2024, and I really appreciate you being with us. Coming up on a program, a special guest at 9:35, not our normal guest on Mondays at 9:35, which of course is Congressman Jim Jordan. Nope. Jim Jordan is going to be with us on Wednesday morning. This morning, we get to talk with Governor Kristi Noem from South Dakota, which I am very much looking forward to. She is one of my favorite governors, not the very best, but she's right up there in that top tier, along with Governor Ron DeSantis. You know who's not in that top tier? Governor Mike DeWine. But Kristi Noem is, and we're going to talk to her. She's going to be in Ohio today, campaigning and supporting for Senate candidate Bernie Moreno. She is one of a lot of high-profile endorsements that Bernie Moreno has locked up in this race, a tight race with Frank LaRose and Matt Dolan. And when I say tight, by the way, I am talking very tight. Frank LaRose and Bernie Moreno have been kind of neck and neck for many, many months in this thing. But in the most recent polling that I've been made aware of through a few different sources, Matt Dolan is surging. And I mean surging, talking like maybe a 2-point race separating all three of them and still close to 40% undecided. So that's a big deal. So it's a very, very close race, and they're all touting the endorsements they have, and they're all looking for every edge they can get. Well, Bernie Moreno has the edge of Kristi Noem in town today, or in the state today. I'll give you the details on all of that coming up. But we'll talk to her about why she's doing what she's doing, why she has decided to endorse Bernie Moreno and a few of her other projects and initiatives that she has going on. She signed a couple of important bills in South Dakota last week, and so it'll be a great conversation coming up at 9:35. So we're looking forward to that chat. And then we are also talking at, it's 10:35 or 11:10. I got to double check the schedule here. But we're also going to be talking with Michael Pregent. And I'll tell you that story when we get to that story. But for now, just know that in 25 minutes or so, we're going to have Kristi Noem on the air. You're not going to want to miss that. Now, before we get started doing anything else, I have learned my lesson after being a little bit lax with the pledge a couple of times last week. I'm not going to make that mistake again. Let's do it, Patriots. Let's stand. Face your flag. Put your hand on your heart and join us for this pledge. If you do not believe in what this glorious republic is and what that flag represents, don't virtue signal for us. Instead, take a knee like the good little Marxist that you are. For those who stand proud, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for wickedness.
Uh-oh.
God. With liberty and justice for all.
A little glitchy on the audio there, but I'm confident you were saying it loudly and proudly through those glitches. So thank you so much for that. Okay, we've got to start with something that is, I don't know. It's two things. Number one, it's infuriating. But number two, it is clarifying. What we saw yesterday is, I think, as clear of a differentiation that needs to be made about what our choices are this November. One of the two presidential candidates that are going to be officially the nominees probably by the end of voting tomorrow in a couple of new primaries. Donald Trump should have it all sewn up by tomorrow evening officially, you know, having the number of delegates by way of primary victories and so forth. And Joe Biden, of course, is virtually unopposed. Yesterday, one of the two spent his time promising justice to the family of Lake and Riley. The other one spent his Sunday apologizing to the killer of Lake and Riley. If that doesn't bring this home for you, if that doesn't clarify for you the choices that we have, if it doesn't speak to you about the values of the parties that each of these two men represent, if it doesn't speak to you about your own ethics, your own morality, your own integrity, what does it say about you if you are a supporter of the one of the two men that is apologizing to the killer of a young 23-year-old nursing student in Georgia, a killer who never should have been in this country in the first place, but is here because of the red carpet rollout by that very same candidate, the current incumbent president of the United States? The policies of his that allowed this man to be in this country to kill this woman. He's apologizing for calling him by the wrong term. And the word wrong, of course, is relative. It's only considered wrong by the same radicals that support him when he called him an illegal alien, or actually called him an illegal. And what does it say about you if you're going to support and vote for the man who spent time at a Georgia rally yesterday promising, indeed promising, justice to the family of that victim? I think you need to ask yourself that question. What does it say about me, and which side of that do I really want to be on? Now, I'm not saying you don't consider things like the economy. I'm not saying you don't consider things like foreign policy. I'm not saying you don't consider things like energy. I'm not saying you don't consider things like American street crime. I'm not saying you don't consider all of the other elements that are of extreme importance to you, but simply from a matter of who are you, would you side with the guy that's promising justice for a traumatized family, or would you side with the guy who is apologizing for the wrong terminology, according to the left, when it comes to describing his presence in this country? I'm going to play them for you in their entirety, and then I'm going to give you a little bit of a back and forth. I'm going to kind of juxtapose these things for you just a little bit, but it's important that you know what we're talking about. Yesterday, Joe Biden did a little sit down with Jonathan Capehart on MSNBC, and Jonathan Capehart called him out for daring to use the I word, because according to the left, no human being is illegal. No one is illegal. And listen to Joe Biden get on his knees and beg forgiveness for such.
Notice the look of surprise on your face when you walked into the chamber and you saw Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was priceless. You feigned shock at seeing her. But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that his, the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing, we have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
So Joe Biden apologizes, expresses regret for using the word illegal because, quote, I'm not going to show any of these people disrespect. Not even the ones that come into the United States and kill American citizens. They're still worthy of his respect. After all, they built the country. Did you know that? Did you know that illegal aliens built the United States of America? I didn't know that. Now, I have heard it said before that immigrants built the country, and largely that is true because we are a nation of immigrants. We came to this country from around the world, mostly from Europe, but from around the world and immigrated to this country. The difference, of course, being legal immigration after the United States was founded. Legal immigration and legal immigrants building the country is what should have happened. And it did happen. Illegal immigration, however, illegal immigrants did not build this country. And by the way, just as an aside, before we get to the Trump part, just as an aside, don't you find it interesting that it depends on the audience to which Joe Biden is speaking as to who built the country? Because you know, and I know, how many times he has spoken in black churches or in gatherings involving African-American history during Black History Month and so on and so forth. He tells black Americans, you built this country. African-Americans built this country. Well, now that he's trying to make good with the illegal alien community, he says, illegal aliens, oh, I'm sorry, undocumented persons built this country. Kind of interesting, just depending on which crowd he has before him. But that's Joe Biden, how he spent his time, expressing regret and sorrow for daring to use the wrong word to describe a man who caved in the skull. And I'm sorry to use the graphic description there, but it is what it is. Caved in the skull of an innocent 23-year-old nursing student doing horrific things to her and killing her. And Joe Biden, instead of saying, I don't care what I called him, I don't have sympathy for murderers, particularly murderers who shouldn't have been in this country in the first place. But he couldn't say those things because he's responsible for him being in this country in the first place. But instead of saying, I'm not going to apologize for that, not to a killer, he did. And while he was apologizing to the killer and to everybody who supports the killer, because the killer being here illegally is exactly what they want, let's juxtapose that with President Donald Trump, who at a Georgia rally yesterday said these things.
Moments ago, I don't know if you heard because you've all been waiting online for 2 days. But just moments ago, this was just before coming up. They just told me prior to what I'm doing right now that Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Lincoln's murderer an illegal. He didn't want to call him illegal. He's apologizing. He said he should have called him an undocumented, not an illegal, and he wanted to apologize. He wanted to apologize, and, well, they have a new name, too. They have a new name that's even worse. They have a new name. You know what the new name is? Neighbor. They want to call him Neighbor. They want to call him another name. Did you ever hear the other one? Newcomer. A newcomer to our country. Are we going crazy or what? Is this country going crazy? How about that one? Newcomer. The newcomer. No, he was illegal. And I say he was an illegal alien. He was an illegal immigrant. He was an illegal migrant. And he shouldn't have been in our country. And he never would have been under the Trump policy. And Biden should be apologizing for apologizing to this killer.
1,000%. There is little to no way whatsoever to dispute exactly what he said. That man would not have been in this country had the Trump policy still been in effect. If Joe Biden had not revoked 94 different Trump policies on day one when he came into office. His first full day of work, which was January 21st of 2021. 94 different Trump-era policies regarding immigration were revoked by Joe Biden with the stroke of his pen. And that's what allowed this killer to be there. That's why there is now a young woman deceased, a family grieving in the most horrific of ways. And Joe Biden is apologizing, not to the family for the blood that is on his hands allowing this guy to be here, but to the killer and his supporters for daring to call him illegal, because no human being is illegal. I listened to those two different sound bites, and then I didn't play the part where Donald Trump promises justice for Lake and Riley if and when he is reelected and becomes president of the United States again. But I listened to both of those in their entirety, and I just the contrast between them just made it so stark for me, and I wanted to just put them together, and I want to play this, and I'm going to share this on my social media, on Twitter at France Rants, and on Facebook at Always Right Radio, and on Truth Social at Always Right WHK. And I'm going to play these so that people understand exactly how clear the contrast is between these two candidates, what our choices are. Our choices are the guy that apologizes to the killer or the guy that says the illegal alien killer never should have been here. Which of these two guys would you support? I think it's a fair question to ask.
Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Lincoln's murderer an illegal.
You used the word illegal.
He didn't want to call him illegal.
An undocumented person.
He said he should have called him an undocumented.
And I shouldn't have used illegal. I should have, it's undocumented.
Not an illegal. And he wanted to apologize.
An undocumented person.
Well, they have a new name, too. You know what the new name is? Neighbor.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
They want to call him neighbor. They want to call him another name. Did you ever hear the other one? Newcomer.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
A newcomer to our country.
An undocumented person.
No, he was illegal. And I say he was an illegal alien.
I'm not going to treat any of these people with respect.
He was an illegal immigrant.
An undocumented person.
He was an illegal migrant.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
And he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy.
Can you dig it?
I really do want to thank Joe Biden and Donald Trump for really providing that clarity of choice yesterday. The fact that they did both of those things on the same day is a very, very good service that they have provided for the American people. And I hope you consider those things. And I hope you'll consider those things, too, when you are campaigning in this, in this general election season to come. And you know what I mean by that. You're not running for office, but you doggone well better not just leave it at I'll vote for Trump. When the primary season got underway, and I was so extraordinarily excited when Ron DeSantis declared his candidacy, because I absolutely love every single move that man has made down in Florida. He has achieved levels of extraordinary accomplishment in legislative matters there in a very short period of time. I mean, he went from winning Florida by 1 point in his first time to 19 points and winning Dade County, which it doesn't happen. Republicans never win Dade County, which is overwhelmingly Hispanic. But anyway, he was just so good. I wanted him to bring his glorious accomplishments and his clear and articulate message of taking on every leftist institution and left-wing apparatus in this country designed to tear us down. I wanted him to bring that to the federal level, and I loved it. But I said at the time, it doesn't matter if it's Ron DeSantis. Or if it happened to be, at the time, Kristi Noem's name was floating around as a possible candidate. As it doesn't matter, Tim Scott declared he was a candidate, and Vivek Ramaswamy, who was a newcomer to the whole thing, and the way the whole thing ran down. And I said, of course, then there is former President Trump, who's going to come back into this thing too. And I said something at that time that I meant, and that is, I don't care who wins this primary, but when that person wins the primary and becomes the nominee, I am going to campaign as if my life and the lives of my family members and the lives of my friends depend upon it for that individual. And I meant it. It's not, and there were a lot of people, by the way, a lot of people who said, not me, I am either only Trump, and that means if DeSantis or somebody else, Nikki Haley, were to win the nomination, then I'm out, because it's not Trump. I'll write Trump's name in. They said, I'm not going to do the campaigning for somebody else. And then there are never Trumpers who said, I'll support anybody except him, but if he goes in, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to campaign and support him. And I said to everybody that is on either side of that, you're being very, very foolish and you're being very, very dangerous. We need to understand that campaigning for the Republican nominee, whomever it might be, can be boiled down to one simple descriptor here, and that is you're campaigning against the evil that is the Democrat Party and the Biden administration. If you are campaigning against evil, it doesn't really matter what is on the other side. You have to campaign like your life depends upon it. So I don't want people to just say, well, I'm going to vote for Trump and then put that to bed. I've made up my mind. I'm going to vote for Trump and put that to bed. It should be your mission between now, March 11th, and it could have been earlier when you started this, but between now, March 11th, and Tuesday, November 5th, it should be your mission to make sure as many other people as you can possibly find also understand that they have to vote for Donald Trump, and they have to vote against Joe Biden, and they have to vote for a person who says, we will bring justice for Lake and Riley, and we will make sure the next killers of the next Lake and Rileys out there will not be allowed into this country, because we will reinstitute sane border security measures. We will do these things. And we have to know at the very same time that if we are unsuccessful in campaigning for and generating more votes for this man, that there will be more Lake and Riley killers and there will be more Lake and Riley victims out there in this country because of those policies. He is pledging to reverse the policies that Biden has put in place here that allowed this to happen, and I believe him. So I'm going to play this over and over again. I'm going to share it on my social media. And just as a, here's a clear contrast viewpoint of what you have to choose from. Somebody that will allow more Lake and Rileys to die and more killers to come in, or somebody who is going to make sure that doesn't happen anymore. And I want you to do the same. We'll talk about this and much more with Governor Kristi Noem. She'll be joining us after the bottom of the hour break.
Thank you for finally noticing.
Waking up America from its woke slumber. Always Right Radio with Bob France on The Answer.
That is exactly right. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's 9:33. Thanks for joining us on AM 1420, The Answer. Let's before I bring in Governor Kristi Noem, is visiting Ohio today. Let's see if we can get a reaction to from her about this. All right, it's going to play.
Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Lincoln's murderer an illegal.
You used the word illegal.
He didn't want to call him illegal.
An undocumented person.
He said he should have called him an undocumented.
And I shouldn't have used illegal. I should have, it's undocumented.
Not an illegal, and he wanted to apologize.
An undocumented person.
Well, they have a new name, too. You know what the new name is? Neighbor.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
They want to call him neighbor. They want to call him another name. Did you ever hear the other one? Newcomer.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
A newcomer to our country.
An undocumented person.
No, he was illegal. And I say he was an illegal alien.
I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect.
He was an illegal immigrant.
An undocumented person.
He was an illegal migrant.
I shouldn't have used illegal.
And he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy.
Again, if you're looking for a more stark contrast between our choices this November, I don't know that you're going to find one better than that. Let's welcome South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who is in Ohio today to campaign for Senate candidate Bernie Moreno. Welcome to AM 1420, The Answer. Good morning, Governor. How are you?
No, good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me on. That clip is amazing because it exactly shows the choice that we have here in November. And he's not only an illegal migrant and immigrant, he's also a murderer and a criminal and needs to be locked up and put away for life. outside of this country.
I mean, you know, what really makes it astounding to me, and this is the reason I wanted to ask you about it, Governor, is it's not just Joe Biden making the apology for using the term illegal to describe this killer of Lake and Riley, and President Trump promising justice to the family of Lake and Riley if he is returned to office. It's not just that Biden did it. It's that Biden knows he had to do it because his base was more outraged at his use of the word illegal than they were with the fact that Lake and Riley had her skull crushed in by this guy.
Well, and that's the extremism of the Democratic Party now that everywhere I go, I feel like I have to tell people, listen, this is no longer about Republicans and Democrats. This is about people who love America and people who hate America, because that is what Joe Biden is defending, is destroying our country and destroying people who come here, live by our laws, and just want an opportunity to be successful and to be safe. And every day that man gets up, it destroys those opportunities for everyday Americans just to live a normal life like we got the chance to when we were growing up.
Yeah, that's very well said, Governor. It's just so stark, the contrast. If Joe Biden is returned to office again, there will be more of those types of killers coming across in his border policies. And if President Trump is there, there will be less victims of illegal alien crime in this country. It's just as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's no secret that the people crossing that border, it's just not the cartels moving drugs and human trafficking, that these countries that hate us are emptying out their prisons, they're emptying out their mental health institutions. They have clearly gotten the message that our border is open, and they're getting rid of their responsibilities and sending them to America so that they don't have to deal with them anymore. That's the kind of people that are coming across that border that we're going to be paying the consequences for decades, generations, if we don't get Donald Trump back in the White House and deport them all.
You have been a very outspoken and unapologetic supporter of the president during the entire primary process, and a lot of people continue to link your name with his potential shortlist for vice presidential candidates. I'm sure you don't have anything to actually state definitively about that, but can you say, are you interested if your name is on said shortlist?
Well, I'm in Ohio today because he told me to come here. He told me to come here, make sure that Bernie's going to win, because he needs Bernie and guys like him that have actually run businesses that have made tough decisions. He wants U.S. senators that will actually place the votes to fix this federal government, to give him the opportunity when he's in the White House to govern and to clear out the swamp. So, yeah, President Trump knows that I support him, and I'll do all I can to help. And I'm more than thrilled to be back in Ohio with all you good people. I just want people to know that I know you have a primary going on, three different people, but Bernie is the guy that's been actually engaged in the battle for years and running businesses, and he's the one that President Trump wants.
Well, very well played, by the way. Very well played. Deflected to the Senate race from the vice president. I respect it. I do understand. We're talking with South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem this morning. She is one of the most popular governors in the country, and one of the very best. I've said that many, many times, not just when she's on the radio, but I do know you hear about this race. It is a tight one. Bernie Moreno and Frank LaRose, our Secretary of State, and Matt Dolan, one of our state senators, all within 2 points of one another, according to multiple polls, and some 30 to 40% of Republican voters in this primary say they're undecided. So, I mean, minds are going to have to be made up over the course of the next 8 days. Now, you said that President Trump asked you to come to Ohio and help him, but I know you believe in Bernie Moreno for your own reasons. Tell me why he's the right guy from those three for you.
I do. I've known Bernie for over a decade. I first met him when we were actually in Iowa campaigning for candidates. And what I was impressed always by Bernie is that he came to this country and built a business, made it very successful, continued to give more opportunities to other families to provide for their children and to put a roof over their heads. And then he didn't just go out there and, you know, say he cared about America. He actually went and knocked on doors for people, and he drove candidates around, and he wrote them checks. And now he's willing to put him and his family on the ballot and say, you know what, I'll take all the criticism, the fire, all the divisiveness that comes with politics, because I believe in this country so much that somebody's got to do it. So that's why President Trump wants Bernie, is because for years he has proven that he has the background and the experience to go to the U.S. Senate and to be different than what we've got out there right now. Right now we've got a bunch of senators that are squishes. They can't fix anything. They can't pass a bill to save their life or even fund the government. He wants somebody out there that will help him fix things, and he believes in him. And he's a great leader.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, I want to talk about people who are getting things done. You're doing things in South Dakota that impact the country. And, you know, obviously if Bernie Moreno or whichever of the three just needs to kick Sherrod Brown out of there because all of them will be better and we will work toward getting a majority in the Senate. But yeah, they've got to come up with sound policy, including policy like what you just signed on the foreign-owned land bill. Tell us about that bill you signed in South Dakota and how important it is.
Yeah, we just signed the strongest bill in the nation to keep countries who hate us from buying our farmland, our land in South Dakota. And it's not just China, which is who we've seen aggressively start purchasing land in the United States. In fact, in the last 10 years, they've increased their purchases of American farmland by over 5,300%. I've been involved in ag policy for over 30 years now. I've seen them buy our chemical companies, our fertilizer companies, our genetics they've stolen. They own our processing systems. Now they're buying our land. And we also, in this bill, banned other countries such as Venezuela, North Korea, Iran, Russia, Cuba from buying any of our property as well. They'd never allow us to purchase their land in their countries. There's no reason we should give them a foothold here. And it is part of our national security plan to make sure that we know who our neighbors are, and that our neighbors are people who love us, and that they love America and want to be in America, not that they're part of the CCP.
You know, I'm so glad that you're doing that in South Dakota. And you're right, it's not just China, but they are clearly the most aggressive in this. And when you add the amount of farmland that they have bought up and where it is near military bases and so forth, add that to the 4,000% increase in illegal crossings by Chinese nationals.
Right.
You just kind of wonder what is coming here. But it has to happen in more than just South Dakota. Have you had any other, you know, communication with other governors that are considering similar legislation?
Yes, other governors are going to do this as well. We are the first state in the country that goes into session and the first one that is out of session. So our legislative session in South Dakota lasts less than 40 days every year. Many times we are the state that runs a bill first and makes sure that it's right, and then other states look at it and pick it up, and then they bring it to their state and do it as well. So I'm hoping many of these other states will look at this law and decide to pass it in their own legislative sessions as well. We were the first state to ban TikTok. After that, dozens of states and federal government banned TikTok, but we've been the only state to stay open. We never defined essential businesses. We never mandated anything. We've been the first one to lead on turning down elevated unemployment benefits. Our state is thriving and has historic revenues and no debt, and we have a no income tax, no personal property tax, and our people are thriving. People are moving to our state by the thousands because we do conservative policies, and That's really the narrative that we need for this election cycle, is that we don't have to talk anymore about what we believe. We've actually done it in South Dakota, and it works. And just need to make sure that people know. People need to know that it works and creates more opportunity for them.
Yeah, that's the reason you're one of the most popular governors, as I said, coming in here. And it's been that way for, you know, since your time there. And everybody has really come to see what you've done. You walk it. You don't just talk it in South Dakota. And in fact, to that end, let me ask you about one other piece of legislation, HB 176, that you signed. You know, shortly after October 7th and the massacre in Israel, there was a, you know, groundswell of support in this country among really everybody for the Israeli people. But shortly after that, when Israel started to fight back and defend itself, a lot of the anti-Semitism was restored and people started to blame them. They're committing genocide and so forth. But you have signed a very important anti-Semitism law in South Dakota. Can you explain that?
We did. We have a bill that we signed into law that I brought forward with the help of a couple of our legislators that defines what anti-Semitism is and puts examples into statute that will help us defend in court and identify these hate crimes and prosecute people for participating in them. It is extremely strong language. It is something that will give us the chance to win these court cases and make sure that we're shutting down what we've seen across this country recently after October 7th and make sure that the Jewish people know that we don't just support them with words. We will support them in our laws and in protecting them and making sure they have every opportunity to be safe and thrive in South Dakota, but outside of South Dakota. This bill, I know already we've had dozens of phone calls from legislators across the country that are saying, how did you do that? Can you send it to us? Because we want to do the same thing in our state, because they're horrified, horrified by the support of pro-Hamas groups in this country and what they've done on our college campuses and in some of our biggest cities to terrorize the Jewish people.
We are talking this morning with South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. She is not only a phenomenal governor, she is also a former congresswoman, which means you know the swamp well. You know, you serve as an executive in Pierre, but you served as a congresswoman in D.C. Can you describe the swamp for us? Because President Trump, of course, is tasked with what he has promised, which is to drain the swamp. You know, perhaps some of that was done in the first term, but it is still very, very clearly a huge job in front of him. What will it take if President Trump is able to make it back? And again, seeking even small majorities in both houses, what will it actually take to drain that swamp, Governor?
Well, he's going to have to, you know, do a lot of the same policies that he did before, but also make sure that he's cleaning house a little farther down into the bureaucracy as well. I was blessed to be able to serve in Congress when he was in the White House. So I was passionate about tax reform, and we got the chance to sign that bill into law when he was president. We spent over 2 years working on that policy that put more money in Americans' pockets, and so that was wonderful. I decided to run for governor because I wanted to be a CEO. Governors get up every day and they get the chance to make decisions that go into place immediately and can make people's lives better. But I'll tell you, Bob, the one thing is I had President Trump as my president for 2 years, the first 2 years that I was governor, and I was on offense every day. We were solving problems and being aggressive on economic growth and helping families. And as soon as Joe Biden went into that White House, I went on defense. All I do now is fight to protect my people and their freedoms and sue the federal government for overstepping their authorities and trying to take away my right to be commander in chief of my National Guard to protect my people. And it's a night and day change. And I would absolutely love to have a president back in the White House that respects the role of the states and protects states' rights and lets governors do their job.
We are talking with Governor Kristi Noem. She's in Ohio today, campaigning for Bernie Moreno in the very, very close Republican primary fight for Senate. Bernie Moreno, Frank LaRose, and Matt Dolin very, very closely locked, according to many surveys. And Governor Noem is here to try to tip that over to Governor or to Bernie Moreno. But you've also been busy on another project. You're a best-selling author, and you're back at it. Governor Kristi Noem, No Going Back is the new book. The truth on what's wrong with politics and how we move America forward. I am so interested in your entire backstory about how you got where you are today. Can you tell me if this book goes into that depth, or is this more about aspirational things moving forward?
Well, it does a little bit of both. I think the first book that I wrote was a New York Times best-selling book. It was called Not My First Rodeo, and it was a lot of my story growing up and how I ended up into politics and some of my experiences. This second book, No Going Back, is a little more unfiltered. It's got some stories in there that people are going to know that is more my thoughts of what I think of politics, why I think President Trump broke politics, why that's a good thing, and that it's a wonderful thing because we have a much more honest conversation now about the corruption that we have in our federal government. And it's almost a how-to book for the average citizen on what they can do to really make a difference to turn this country around. I think that they will love it. For me, it was very fun to write because it was very candid and shared some stories that people will be very interested in reading. And I think that every person who reads every chapter will walk away from that chapter and say, okay, I can do that. That makes sense, and that will make a difference. And here's where it worked and why it's good that President Trump is having the conversations that he's been having.
Governor, you talk in this book, I understand, about not going back to the Republican Party of the 2000s. What was that party compared to the party today? Because a lot of people say that the party of Trump is a little more chaotic because he brings some chaos. And I guess if you're going to disrupt the establishment the way that it is, you kind of have to bring some of that chaos. I know a lot of people see that word negatively, but I think there can be some positive to it. But the Republican Party of the 2000s versus the 2020s, the difference is what?
Well, we're not going back to the days of Mitt Romney and the Cheneys. I mean, that was the status quo. That was, you know, funneling money to your friends and becoming more and more indebted to other countries like China and letting them control our monetary supply and letting the bureaucrats run the joint. And that just doesn't happen with Donald Trump. He got very candid about the swamp and the shadow government that runs and makes decisions and that he's going to break that up. And, yeah, it's not going to be easy. But it's going to be something that he'll be honest about. And I've never seen somebody who has so much coming after him every day to try to stop him And he still gets up believing in this country and believing in the everyday American and fights for us. So it's pretty inspirational. I think we can live with a little bit of chaos. We'll all remember that we're doing this because we still have hope for this country. If we lose this country, where do we go? I mean, there's no place better. And I think that's the conversation I have with President Trump all the time is he gets that. He's been and done business in other places in the world, and he just said this is the last country where people can have the opportunities that we have. So if we let this go, where do we go and where do our children go? That's why he's in this fight.
Governor, last thing for you this morning. I'm so glad you just mentioned the word Cheney, because you want to talk about everything that they have done to try to stop Donald Trump from day one. It includes the January 6th committee. One of the top news stories that we have this morning is the revelation that the January 6th committee literally falsely claimed that they had no evidence showing former President Trump tried to get the National Guard to be on detail providing security at the Capitol on that day, because he knew there were going to be his supporters there asking patriotically and peacefully asking for a pause in the certification of the election so that an audit can be conducted. And he knew that protests always bring counter protests. And to make sure there was nothing that got out of hand, he wanted the National Guard there. There was evidence of it, and that committee intentionally buried that evidence. What does that say about the true depth of the swamp and about those people like Liz Cheney?
It's just a continuation of the lies that they've been trying to sell for years about there was no Hunter Biden laptop, there was Russia collusion. I mean, it's just another one of those lies that I hope once more that the American people's eyes are being opened up to the continual disgrace that our leaders and that what that committee did and the disinformation and the lies that they spread in order just to take down a president they didn't like.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It's just it's amazing the depths to which they will go, though, in order to try to stop him. If they can't beat him at the ballot box, they're going to try to beat him in the courts. If they can't beat him in the courts, they're going to try to, make up things like this, make up things like insurrections and try to completely change the narrative. It's so good for the president, the former president, and hopefully future president, that he has you on his side. It is equally a positive for Bernie Moreno that you are in Ohio today campaigning for him. We need to take that Senate back. We need strong leaders there, and we certainly respect your position on this, Governor Noem, and we thank you so very much for being here.
Well, make no mistake that Bernie is the guy that President Trump wants. He knows he's a fighter and that he knows that he's the guy that will actually go there and help him get the job done. So I hope everybody today listening to this interview, if you haven't made up your mind, go vote for Bernie. You can today, and then go tell a bunch of your friends to vote for Bernie too. This is a primary that's incredibly important, and we got to have the right guy that actually will back up the president when he needs him draining out the swamp.
It is extraordinarily important. I hope you enjoy your visit to the Buckeye State, Governor. We hope we can chat again. Thank you so much.
Always do. Thanks, Bob.
God bless. That's Governor Kristi Noem. She is in Ohio today. She's going to be in Columbus, I understand it, campaigning for Bernie Moreno, and you heard it. She is underscoring what we've already been told, of course, and that is President Trump has chosen Bernie Moreno, has endorsed him, given him his, quote, full and total endorsement. And Kristi Noem is here today supporting that, trying to help unjam that very, very, deadlock. I won't call it deadlock, but it's a very, very tight race. There is kind of a jam there. It is, from what I hear, a 2-point race really kind of separating all three of the candidates there. And I've said this before, I don't endorse in these primary races because I want to, be a strong supporter for whomever it is that wins it. And I really do have some things that I like about all three of these guys. That's not to say I don't have my favorite. I do know who I'm going to vote for. But I will say that if Frank LaRose is the nominee, I will campaign hard for Frank LaRose. If Bernie Moreno is the nominee, I will campaign hard for Bernie Moreno. And if Matt Dolan is the nominee, I will campaign hard for Matt Dolan. And one of the reasons why is what we heard 2 weeks ago when we were at the Lincoln Day dinner in Medina County in Wadsworth with Dennis Prager. And Dennis Prager reminded us all, you cannot not try to defeat the left. You cannot not go full out with everything you have just because your favorite candidate doesn't win a primary. You go at it as if this is the fight of your life. You have to defeat the left, defeat the left, defeat the left. And that is what I want everybody to remember. Whether Bernie Moreno is your guy, Frank LaRose, or Matt Dolan, if your guy doesn't win, you have to go just as hard for who does win, because Sherrod Brown is the enemy. Sherrod Brown is the enemy because he's a part of the Democrat majority in the United States Senate that is trying to literally destroy this country, foundationally destroy this country. That's the reality. And so if you are Governor Noem, you're President Trump, you have made your decision and you're endorsing Bernie Moreno. And if you agree with that, then go forth and do it with vigor if he is the nominee. If he is your guy and he doesn't win the nomination and is, you know, does not win that primary, go forth with vigor and fight for whoever does. I'm telling you right now, that is my mantra. I agree with Dennis Prager wholeheartedly. We have to defeat the left. It's not just about supporting who you love. It's about defeating who you loathe. And I loathe the left-wing Marxists that are currently in control of the Democrat Party. I'm going to take a time out here at the top of the hour. Thank you again to Governor Noem. That interview, by the way, will be isolated and available for you probably within an hour at WHKRadio.com so that you can share.
Free. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Ohio Army National Guard. Aired by the Ohio Association of Broadcasters and this station.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth. Or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer is your host, Bob France.
All right. We do continue now at 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Hour number two is underway on a Monday. It's the 11th morning of the third month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Thank you again to Governor Kristi Noem for carving some time out for us here in Northeast Ohio. She is in our state capital in Columbus today. She has gone to the Capitol to peacefully and patriotically express her support for Bernie Moreno. I don't know why I just channeled President Trump at the ellipse. But, yeah, she's all in for Bernie Moreno, and she says, of course, President Trump has asked her to come here and ask you to be in support of Bernie Moreno. President Trump has given Bernie his endorsement, and Governor Noem is here to work for him. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We secured commitments. I secured personal commitments from each of the three candidates, not from their teams, but from them. I talked to Bernie Moreno personally and asked him, will you come to studio and do a three-way forum with your two opponents? He said yes. I talked to Frank LaRose. Will you come into our studio in Independence and do a three-way forum with your two opponents? He said yes. Last week, I finally got a chance to talk personally to Senator Dolan. Will you come into our studio and do this forum? He said yes. So we had a confirmed agreement. But now we are unable to get a date this week. So we are, of course, you know, 1 week away tomorrow from the actual primary, and early voting is already going on. But I've been trying to get them to lock in either tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, and unfortunately, now for at least two of them, they have turned it over to their teams. I will tell you, Bernie Moreno has asked me, I don't know, almost a half a dozen times in the last 3-4 days on text messaging, we got a date scheduled, he's ready to go. And I've told him directly that Secretary LaRose has indicated that maybe it won't be able to be done, but he'd be more than happy to come in and do another one-on-one interview. I have not really even gotten that much from Senator Dolan's team at this particular point in time. But I do know that when speaking to me directly, all three of them have said, yes, I'm in. Make it happen. But trying to make it happen has been an obstacle course when it comes to the teams. Some are suggesting we have to go through ORP, the Ohio Republican Party, and get them to schedule this. The way they scheduled the three actual debates that they have held in various parts of the state over the last couple of months. So I don't know what to make of it. I just know that I am ready tomorrow. I am ready to on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, and then this is an open call. Anybody who has contact with Secretary LaRose or Senator Dolan, please ask them to reach back out to me and make this happen. There are too many things at stake here for us to make the wrong choice, and I need to pit all of them against one another in on every single issue. I want them each to answer the attack ads that they have that have been levied against them by one another, and it's been a three-way in that regard. You know, it's been pretty much equal combatants here. And I want this to be in our studio this week. They have said they will do it, but only one is reaching out to me and saying, let's go, let's go, let's go. That's Bernie Moreno. Take that for what it's worth. Frank LaRose, I just saw it bringing America back to life over the weekend. He made an appearance on Saturday, and we chatted, and I again reminded him, I'm waiting for your guys to give me the green light on a day this week. Bernie Moreno said he'll pretty much do any day. Which one will work for you? And I could not get a commitment, and I have not gotten a commitment from Senator Dolan either. I want a commitment from all three of them because I want to bring you a completely unbiased and final face-to-face-to-face presentation of platforms for you to make your decision before next Tuesday, the 19th. So if you are in contact in any way, shape, or form with any of the individuals on those teams, please tell them that you want this to happen. And hopefully we'll be able to bring it to you. Okay, want to pivot now just a little bit. Want to talk about the President's State of the Union address on Thursday. I was not live on Friday, as you know, because I was emceeing the Bringing America Back to Life pro-life event. Thank you, Rob Walgate, for filling in for me. I always appreciate all of that wonderful support from the folks that I have waiting in the wings, and the bullpen always warmed up, so I know Rob did a phenomenal job. But I do want to talk about the State of the Union, and particularly some of the foreign policy aspects of what the President had to say. And joining me now to react to that is Michael Pregent. He is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. He's a former intelligence officer and a terrorism expert. Joining us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Michael, thank you for the time this morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Counterterrorism expert, because I don't want to be an expert at terrorism, but yes.
Well done. Well done. You served in Desert Shield and Desert Storm as a liaison in Egypt as well during the 2000 Intifada, and a counterinsurgency intelligence officer at CENTCOM in 2001. So you have experience, as well as company commander in Afghanistan. So you have experience in virtually all of these potential hot zones in some cases. So, I want to start, if I may, in Gaza, Michael, sure. Because President Trump Biden is all over the place on this. You know, in the short period of time, I was just talking about this with Governor Noem, for a very short period of time after October 7th, with the world still in shock at the horrific massacre of Jews in Israel, you know, President Biden and, you know, Democrats and Republicans alike all were condemning the horrific actions of Gaza, and Israel has a right to defend itself, et cetera, et cetera. Then when Israel started defending itself, mostly those on the left said, okay, that's enough. That's enough defense. That's enough. That's proportional. You know, you got him back. Okay, now let's have a ceasefire here. Now Joseph R. Biden, realizing he is getting slaughtered in the polls and knowing that he has to win every single battleground state, including those with high populations of Arab Americans or Muslim Americans or Middle Eastern origin and ethnic Americans who want ceasefires, they're telling him, we will not support you. They're voting uncommitted in primaries. And so now he is cracking down on his support for Israel and, in fact, almost threatening Bibi Netanyahu, telling him to pull back. What is your read on his stance on Israel, and what should Israel's response be to its ally, the United States?
Well, thanks for having me. Israel should do what it has to do. It has to defeat Hamas. It has to go into the last stronghold and defeat those last two battalions of Hamas fighters, or four battalions. That's important. The president is trying to secure the, you know, I learned Arabic at 18. I have a lot of Arab friends, and the media paints them with a broad brush, meaning anyone who's Muslim, anybody who's Arab, somehow is anti-Israel, and that's just not the case. And the president needs to know that. You don't have to abandon Israel to secure 200,000 votes in Michigan or 200,000 votes in or 100,000 votes in Minnesota, because you're going to lose American votes. When you abandon Israel, you're going to lose Jewish votes when you abandon Israel, and you got to. He has to stop thinking that every Arab is going to not vote for him because he's taking a pro-Israel stance. So he needs to weigh that. But the media is completely focused on this election and abandoning Israel in order to secure a fringe vote from pro-Hamas, pro-jihad voters in Ilhan Omar's district and also in Tlaib's district. And mm-hmm. I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah, and you know, it's such a frustrating thing. We just had here in Cleveland yesterday a very, very bad situation. And I'm sorry, Saturday. Was it yesterday or Saturday? And I'm trying to remember all of the information that I got. In which there was a shutdown, almost a complete shutdown of Cleveland Hopkins Airport because of these pro-Palestinian, pro-ceasefire, pro-Hamas people blocking entranceways and access ramps to get to the airport. Protests going on at the State of the Union address as well. They're doing everything they can to try and protect a population of people that they claim is victim of genocide, but that population of Palestinians in Gaza is five times bigger than it was 20 years ago. So if there is an Israeli genocide, they're not very good at genocide, are they?
No, they're not. And you know, the media tries to separate the Palestinians from Hamas. We have to remember that Palestinians in Gaza, 80% of them voted for Hamas. And those military-aged men that are not part of Hamas still went across and kidnapped Israelis and brought them back and tortured them and held them and in some cases killed them. And we saw what they did to the bodies. They desecrated the bodies. And these were not Hamas fighters. These were Palestinian men of fighting age. And in the Middle East, men of fighting age, 16 to 65. And so I don't have a lot of sympathies for the Palestinian male in Gaza that supports Hamas. And these protests, you know, we have to look at this country called Qatar. Qatar is the Hotel Continental in the John Wick movie. They support Hamas. They're funding these protests here in the United States. They're quieting dissent in D.C. They're buying praise from politicians. This country believes that because it hosts a U.S. base in Qatar, that it can fund these terrorist groups. And they're funding these protests. And like you said, they're shutting down airports. They shut down the president's path to the State of the Union address. Now, think about this for a second. If those were Christians or Jews or Republicans who were shutting down these airports by protesting, they'd all be arrested. We are sending a horrible message to terrorist leaders that there is a protected class in this country that are jihadists. And I've been taught to think like the enemy for 30 years. And if I was a terrorist leader, I'd be looking at the talent in these protests, these violent protests, and I'd start recruiting these military-age males that are untouchable for some reason by law enforcement because they're terrified to take on an Arab Muslim military-age male who is basically shouting jihad and is one degree away from violence. And that's the big issue here.
That's well said. We are talking with Michael Pregent. He is a veteran of three wars. He's a counterterrorism expert. And we're talking about the terrorist organization. And just to kind of follow up on your point about the difference or the lack thereof, a distinction between Palestinian civilians and Hamas. Not only did they vote for that that terrorist organization to lead Gaza, they supported them after October 7th. There were surveys that were done, and 76, I think it was, percent of civilians still supported Hamas, and 76 per, I'm sorry, it was over 80% still supported Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It went up.
Yeah.
So you know, it's not as if they were like, oh my gosh, look what they've done in our name, and we are terribly sorry for that. No, they supported it, and everything you said about desecration, and I'll never forget the videos of the trucks driving with dead Israeli bodies in the back of them, driving through some of the streets in Gaza, and civilians jumping up on the sides and pounding on them with their fists, sticks, clubs, everything they could find to pound those bodies. So I agree with you. There is a very, very slim, if any, distinction at all between civilians and Hamas members there. Let's move to further east now. We'll go into Ukraine. This one isn't terrorism. This is just straight up war, an invasion of one foreign army into a sovereign country. But the United States has already contributed close to $130, $140 billion to the war effort for Ukraine. Now there is another 60-some billion that has been laid out and is awaiting a vote if it ever gets to one on the House floor. Speaker Johnson does not seem like he is going to let that happen. But what is your read on our ongoing involvement in the Ukrainian effort?
Well, we're not giving them the offensive capabilities to win. So if we were spending all this money by giving the Ukrainians an offensive capability to take back territory, meaning aircraft, long-range artillery, and missiles, of course you got to have the defense, we'd be in a much better situation. But the Biden administration's plan from the get-go was to have Zelensky leave after, you know, they said, get out now, because in 3 days the Russians are going to be in Kyiv. That didn't happen. We actually have a capable fighting force on the ground that wants an offensive capability to push back against the Russians. The reason this is so expensive is the Ukrainians are fighting like the Russians used to fight. The way the Russians fight. So if they want to hit a tank on a football field, they take out the whole football field. The Ukrainians are doing the same thing. And what this means is that all those munitions are being used to take out that position, and they're very expensive. That's why the majority of this funding is to replenish ammo already spent in the conflict. We have a term in the military called economy of force. One shot, one kill. We use one precision guided bomb to kill a target. The Ukrainians are using 10. They don't trust our technology. They're using 10 attack UAVs, attack drones, right, instead of one. So we need to teach them how to implement economy of force. One shot, one kill is the U.S. military philosophy. In the Ukraine and in Russia, it's 100 shots for one tank. They basically destroy a football field to kill one target. And that's why this is so expensive. That's why if we actually got the right special ops guys there, teaching them how to do intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance and economy of force, this would be a less expensive war. And if we gave them more offensive capabilities, that'd be great. My biggest complaint right now is everyone who in your audience who thinks that we shouldn't be doing this, we shouldn't be giving money to Ukraine, our biggest concerns are about the corruption. Where's this money going? If it was being sent to the right place, buying the right equipment, and having the right U.S. advisors tell the Ukrainians how to fight, this would be a much different situation.
I have to ask, when you talk about corruption and you talk about whether this money is going to the right place, there is growing evidence from a number of sources and people that I've talked to on this program and on my television interview program I do that have said the leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, is not what he appears to be, that he is one of the richest men in all of Europe, not just Eastern Europe and maybe even the world, that he has essentially been selling a bill of goods when he's coming over here in his military fatigues, as if he's out there on the battlefield when he's the farthest thing, that he is largely responsible for a lot of the conditions being what they are right now. And perhaps even for the reason why Putin came in the first place. Do you have an opinion or an analysis of Zelensky and what he really is?
All right. So I've dealt with a lot of these power brokers, right, that are corrupt, from Afghanistan to Iraq to Syria, and now we're looking at the Ukraine. And what I would tell you in each case, that there is no rule of law in these countries. The corruption rules the day. So if you are lining your pockets and you're able to pay your officers stay in place, and you're able to keep people in position through corruption, through bribes, through payoffs. Unfortunately, that's how it works in these countries that don't have a rule of law. If he was a perfect politician that adhered to everything, he would be replaced. He would be weak. There has to be a level of corruption to be effective in these countries, and that's from Iraq, Syria, to Afghanistan, to Ukraine, any country where we have allies that are facing very tough adversaries. That's not to excuse it. It's just to paint it in an accurate picture.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and that's what we need. We need an accurate picture here. And again, a lot of people don't want to, you know, think about these things. They don't want to consider. They want to think that, you know, this is good and evil. It's simple. If you wear a Ukrainian flag, it's good. And if you wear a Russian flag, he's the devil. Or even if you, you know, like in Tucker Carlson's case, went there and even listened to hear what Putin's side of this whole thing was, then you are a traitor to the country and a traitor to liberty. But I don't know that it's that simple, is it, Michael? I mean, and that's not to suggest Putin isn't a killer, and he is. It's not to suggest that he has a right to go into another country. He doesn't. But the idea that we should just automatically declare everything that we know about Volodymyr Zelensky to be good and everything we need to claim to know about Vladimir Putin to be bad, that is not necessarily the way things are.
Yeah, when we're dealing with bad men like Putin, sometimes you need bad men like Zelensky to counter them, and that's just the counterterrorism kind of thing, right? But you know, when Flynn was criticized for meeting with Putin, Flynn being the former intelligence officer, that was such an invaluable position for him to be in, because he could now see what Putin looks like when he lies. So we already have all this intelligence information about Putin, but now you get to sit across from him, ask him a question, and watch how he lies to you. I'm not saying Tucker Carlson's doing that, because I think Tucker Carlson, you know, he's a journalist. He's looking at it from a different perspective. But if I had the chance to meet the guy, and I knew a lot about him, and I'd be able to sit there and ask him questions and watch him lie to me, you get a holistic picture of who your adversary is. And this is what we did in Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan with our adversaries. We present them with what we know to be true, and we watch them lie to us. So we can see what their body language is like when they lie to us, and then we take the appropriate, you know, measures when it comes to leverage.
I don't think that's you know, exclusive to those others. And I'm not sure that Tucker Carlson wasn't also doing the same thing, sizing him up to see what he looks like and sounds like and to see how believable he is. Because, you know, and again, he got so much criticism. And I've brought this up many times on this program, and other people have as well. Journalists went and interviewed Saddam Hussein. Journalists went and interviewed Ayatollah Khomeini even after the hostages were taken. Journalists went to Cuba and interviewed Castro. Journalists went to somebody went to a cave in Afghanistan after Bin Laden declared jihad on the United States. Right. Yeah. And nobody said
a friend of mine went and interviewed Osama bin Laden.
There you go. And these were all considered intrepid journalists doing very, very important work. Tucker Carlson goes to Russia and interviews Putin, and he is a traitor. And he is, you know, he's a stooge of he's a useful idiot, a stooge and a puppet of Putin. And I don't understand that mentality.
Well, see, the thing about it is anybody who wants to watch that interview with Putin and then watch how Putin lies. And it's just a great education for anybody who wants to study an adversary. And, you know, we had the freedom to criticize, of course, right? But there is so much value in what Tucker Carlson did by conducting that lengthy interview that people should watch it to see. If they don't like Putin, you can watch him lie. You can watch him message. You can see why he is such a strong adversary. He knows how to say the right thing to his people to justify his actions.
Very well said. Michael Pregent, thank you so much for the very important information. I want everybody to follow you on Twitter and learn more as you bring great analysis. MP Pregent, MPP, in other words, MP Pregent, P-R-E-G-E-N-T is the Twitter handle. Make sure you follow him there. And thank you so much for the terrific analysis.
Thanks for the opportunity.
It, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Choose AmeriCorps.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Always Right Radio with Bob France on The Answer.
Okay, 10:34 now. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. I have tweeted the compare and contrast videos of Donald Trump speaking about Laken Riley's killer and Joe Biden speaking about Laken Riley's killer.
Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Laken's murderer an illegal.
You used the word illegal.
He didn't want to call him illegal.
An undocumented person.
He said he should have called him an undocumented.
And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented.
But not an illegal. And he wanted to apologize.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
Well, they have a new name, too. You know what the new name is? Neighbor.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
They want to call him neighbor.
An undocumented person.
They want to call him another name. Did you ever hear the other one? Newcomer.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
A newcomer to our country.
An undocumented person.
No, he was illegal. And I say he was an illegal alien.
I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect.
He was an illegal immigrant.
An undocumented person.
He was an illegal migrant.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
And he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy.
I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect.
And Joe Biden.
There it is. There it is. It's 59 seconds of clear contrast between what the left believes and what the right believes. The left believes in apologizing to killers who bash in the skulls of their young, defenseless female victims. And the right believes in criticizing the policies that allow these illegal aliens to be in this country in the first place so that they can commit those violent murders. It's an astounding reality. I want to share that. I got it uploaded in the last break to Twitter. And I'm going to put it on my Facebook page, which is Always Right Radio, and my Truth Social page, which is Always Right WHK as well. I'll put it on Instagram too, Always Right Radio. Grab it, share it, spread it everywhere, and say you have a choice in October, November 5th. Which of these do you want? Which of these sides do you take? And by the way, Elon Musk is getting in on the action too. Elon Musk, early this morning, came out and tweeted this, talking about these illegals who are coming into this country and committing these terrible crimes. He reposted or retweeted a video of Barack Obama, and he said, this was not 30 years ago. This was Obama in 2009. So this is just 15 years ago. Barack Obama in 2009 saying this.
This is not going to be a free ride. It's not going to be some instant amnesty. What's going to happen is you are going to pay a significant fine. You are going to learn English. You are going to go to the back of the line so that you don't get ahead of somebody who was in Mexico City applying legally. But after you've done these things over a certain period of time, you can earn your citizenship. So that it's not something that is guaranteed or automatic. You've got to earn it. But over time, you give people an opportunity. Now, it only works, though, if you do all the pieces. I think the American people, they appreciate and believe in immigration. But they can't have a situation where you just have 500,000 people pouring over the border without any kind of mechanism to control it. So we've got to deal with that at the same time as we deal in a humane fashion with folks who have put down roots here, have become our neighbors, have become our friends. They may have children who are U.S. citizens. That's the kind of comprehensive approach that we have to take.
Okay. So let's unpack that for just a second. Barack Obama, of course, making his case for pathway to citizenship, which is a non-starter for me, for Donald Trump, for you, and for anybody who's got an ounce of common sense. No, you don't get a pathway to citizenship, even if you learn English, even if you pay a big fine, even if you meet all of these other criteria. If you break the law and you come into this country illegally, nope. About the only part of that I agreed with is you go to the back of the line behind people who are waiting to come into this country legally. But the real money line there is the quote line where he said, quote, we can't have 500,000 people pouring over the border. And what Elon Musk tweeted is, quote, now 10 times as many people per year are pouring over the border. America is 4% of the Earth's population. If even 1% of the rest of Earth's population moves here, and there is every incentive to do so right now under Biden, that is 80 million more people. That's 80 million to add to the 330 or 340 million we have now. The country would be unrecognizable, unsustainable in every single way. Lake and Riley, there would be just scores of Lake and Rileys and Kate Steinleys and others who are killed by illegals. They will flood this country if we don't control the border right now. And the left just thinks that this is A-okay. So you share that information with everybody that you can. I'm going to tweet it out, or I should say I've already tweeted it out. I'm going to put it on as many of my other different socials as I can. Make sure you grab it, share it with your network, whether it's social media, whether it's an email chain, whether it's friends, family. I don't really care, but make sure that you share that as much as possible. Okay, I want to pivot to something for just a moment, and I want to take a look back at what just happened on Friday and Saturday. I was a big part of, well, and let me rephrase, I don't say that as a chest puff. I wasn't a big part of it. I mean, it was a big part of my weekend. I spent all day and night on Friday and all day and night on Saturday at Babel, bringing America back to life. First things first, thank you to Molly Smith for asking me to MC. I believe it was the fifth straight year that I've done so. It is a lot of work. It is a long time. And these volunteers who work for Cleveland Right to Life and for the Bringing America Back to Life Convention Committee, and their very small board, they are just phenomenal, phenomenal people doing extraordinary work for all of the right reasons. None of them gets rich off of this. They're volunteers, but they are all dedicated servants and protectors of life. And just working with them and for them for this weekend is a real true honor for me. Like I said, it's a long 2 days. It starts at about 7 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and it ends at around 10 o'clock at night on Friday. So what's that? A good 15-hour day. Then we come back on Saturday and do it all over again. And I want to tell you something. You might think that, you know, 30 hours of convention time would drag. I'm here to tell you, and if you were there, you know this, if you've never been, you should make this a part of your plans for next year. That flew by because of the quality of speakers that they brought to the podium this year. I have, as I said, emceed four previous Babel conventions and been blown away by some of the incredible presentations. I've interviewed some of them, and I will interview some of these, but as fantastic as they were, I don't think any have been as top to bottom outstanding as what I saw and heard on Saturday and Sunday. I could sit here and give praise to and try to recap probably a dozen and a half or so presentations. I can't, but I mean, I have the ability to. I want to highlight a couple of them because you're going to hear interviews with them in depth, both on this program and on Strictly Speaking in the very near future. I got a chance to spend an hour listening to the story of Pastor Artur Pawlowski, the Canadian pastor. Canadian pastor, Polish descent, grew up under the communist, in the communist bloc, came to Canada, is a Canadian citizen, leads his church there. You, this guy.
Out! 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 Immediately out! I don't want to talk to you. Not a word. I don't care what you have to say. Out!
You know, we've had fun with that soundbite over the course of the last 2 years or so. Because it's amazing. It's also kind of funny. Police were coming into his church to evict him, as well as the other parishioners who were there to pray and to participate in their church service. And the police came to remove them all because they were daring to violate the Canadian COVID protocols and policies. And they came to evict Pastor Pawlowski. Pastor Pawlowski literally threw them out of the church, walked them out to the door. He didn't shove them or get physical with them, but like physically, you know, approached them and made them leave his parishioners alone so that they could pray. Pastor Pawlowski was subsequently arrested. What we found out during his presentation on Saturday was that Pastor Pawlowski has been arrested dozens of times. They have been targeting him for his commitment to free speech, not American free speech, because it's Canada. There is a much more limited variety of that, but freedom to pray, freedom to gather together in prayer. And as Pastor Pawlowski pointed out, what they did in Canada and what we did here in the United States and what was done in countries all over the globe for the first time in all of really recorded human history, churches were closed. Churches were the one venue, the one space that people could always rely on to be open in times of crisis, that people could always rely on to be there in times of chaos and tumult and disorganization and questions. That's what it's there for. And for the first time, churches were not open for people to go and pray, even if it's to pray for an end to the very virus and the infections that were killing people. And then obviously the quote unquote antidotes, sometimes known as vaccines, more accurately known as prophet jabs, prophet shots, poison darts, whatever. But the churches were supposed to be open for people to pray for an end to those things. And for those who suffered. And they were closed. It was one of the most, the presentation and the obstacles still faced by Pastor Pawlowski, the presentation he gave on Saturday was simply astounding. It has been archived and will be available for viewing on the Bringing America Back to Life website a week from today. And I will share some of that with you on my webpage, or on my social media pages, I should say, and I'll even play some of it here on the air for you. But it was just simply remarkable. And I want to encourage you to look up Pastor Artur Pawlowski. It's just like you think it would be spelled, just like Arthur with no H. And Pawlowski is just like it would sound, Pawlowski. But I strongly encourage you to read his story, learn his story, listen to his story as a cautionary tale. Because what he is facing right now in Canada will be spreading around to a lot of other places, particularly if they come up with another pandemic. And I think they're already working on it. We talked about this some on Thursday with the CDC director already making plans for the fall on what they're going to do to us and ask us to do to ourselves. But it better be used as a cautionary tale. The other one that I want to hit just super quick, and I will again, when it becomes available on the website next week, next 1 week from today, I'll remind you again, but I thought I knew Chloe Cole's story. Chloe Cole, the maybe one of the most well-known and most targeted detransitioners in the world, because she has become an outspoken advocate for young people, and she has become an outspoken opponent of the transgender industrial complex and their targeting of children to ruin and literally destroy their lives. She was a very, very confused and very easily manipulated 12-year-old girl who had been just completely grabbed by the grooming movement online and in person and in public schools to think that she should have been a boy when she was 12 years old. And her tale of what she did when she decided, yes, she was actually a boy, and what was done to her parents is one of the most compelling things I've ever listened to. She finally came out to her parents and said, I really think I'm a boy, and I want to change my name from Chloe to Leo. She took three of the letters in the word Chloe and decided to go with Leo and to ask them to refer to her as a boy and with he and him pronouns, and to still love her slash him as much as they did before. And they tried really hard, but they didn't know what to do. They knew there was something wrong with her, that there was obviously a psychological issue here, and so they sought help. Where? They sought help online. Where else do you look for what do I do if blank? What do I do if my dog isn't eating? Let's look online, see what the things there might be. What do I do if, you know, whatever calamity or strange thing that we can't figure out happens, we look for answers online, right? It's the new go-to resource for all things. They went online and found what? What can you find if you look for how do I help my child who is confused and thinks they're transgender? What do you find online? I ask that question rhetorically because I think you already know the answer. The answer is affirm them. Help them get drugs. What do I do? How do I help my child? Drug them. That's what online will tell you. Every search result you get on Google will tell you drug them. Give them drugs to block their puberty. So that it's easier when you give them drugs that are cross-sex hormones to help them become like the other gender. So that that will be easier when it comes time to physically, surgically mutilate them. That's what you do. And we will call it gender-affirming care. That's what her parents were told. And her parents were terrified of that prospect. So Chloe Cole's parents went to her doctor and said, doctor, she's 12. She's confused. What do we do? Online told us to just go with it. And you know what her doctors told her? Told them? Yes, go with it or else she'll kill herself. Your daughter's going to be dead if you don't allow her to become him. If you don't allow her to start the drugs, and ultimately, a couple of short years later, to undergo a double mastectomy. in the full effort to change her sex from female to male. They told her, she told the parents, I should say, that she would kill herself if they didn't do this. What is a parent to do at that point? If the medical professionals say, if you don't do this, you'll have a dead child, what parent isn't going to say, okay, then we'll do it? Because that's what they told her. Told them, I should say, about her. So she had the double mastectomy. And she began living her life in school, in high school, as a boy, where she endured some of the most extraordinary pain and heartache physically and emotionally she had ever felt before she realized what a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake she had made. And then when she wanted to detransition, all of the support staff, I won't call them support staff, the support figures in her life, the doctors who affirmed her care, the counselors, the teachers, the friends in the trans community that all supported her. When she said, I want to undo this, I made a huge mistake. You know what happened to all of those people? Gone. They ghosted her. Rather than affirming her choice now, like they affirmed her choice before, they completely ghosted her and then ridiculed her and condemned her. They say, believe her when she thinks she's in the wrong body and provide her with the resources, including government-funded drugs and surgical procedures. They say, believe her when she wants to do all of these things. Then when she says, I made a mistake, I need to go back, I need to get off of these male hormones, get back to female hormones, and try to restore what I was, did they again say, believe her? Okay. Nope. She's persona non grata. They abandoned her. And now that she is an advocate for telling children the truth and telling parents, no, your child is not going to kill themselves if you let them grow up as what they are, even if they're confused and influenced by online sources, by influencers, by LGBTQ, by teachers, by counselors and coaches and others who are trying to change them into things that they're not. Let them grow up. They will grow out of it. Because what is being done to them is permanent. She now goes back to her own identity, her own real natural self as Chloe Cole, female. But the damage done to her body is forever. She has forever damage. And there is nobody to help her. The same insurance companies and government funds that allowed her to transition will provide nothing for her to go back to what she truly is. That tells you all you need to know about this industry. Chloe Cole told us that story. There wasn't a movement in the room as 500 people sat there and listened to her. By the time she was done, I don't think there was a dry eye in the room. When it was over, I got up and took the podium again, and I hugged her on her way back because I felt like so protective of her, the courage that she showed to tell that story, knowing what they're doing to children. It was astounding. It was astounding. There were presentations that were given over this weekend. Again, I can't go through them all like I just did Chloe's and Pastor Pawlowski's, but if you've never been, you need to make a point of, because this battle is not going to be won in the next 12 months. Hopefully some battles will be won, but the war will not be won over the course of the next 12 months. It'll be back again next year because it'll be needed, talking about bringing America back to life, but do what you can to be a part of it. And I will again keep you posted as to when those videos of the presentations are available online at bringingamericabacktolife.org. And I'll probably play some of them on the radio for you as early as next week because it needs to be done. So that's just a little bit of what happened to me over the weekend. I wanted to share with you as much of it as I could. And if you would like to respond, certainly we will take your calls. 216-901-0945. We have a lot of other news stories to get into in hour number three as well. So if you want to dial now about any of them, 216-901-0945.
Death. Again, the big problem is not how the president said it. The big problem is what he said. I'm Albert Mohler.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
Is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420 The Answer.
Hour number three is underway on this Monday, the eighth morning, or excuse me, it's 8 minutes after 11 o'clock. My apologies. It is the 11th morning of the third month in the year of our Lord 2024. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks again to my friend Rob Walgate from the Ohio Policy Ohio Roundtable and the American Policy Roundtable. Filled in for me so admirably on Friday while I was doing the Bringing America Back to Life event. And I got nothing but positive reviews, including from Seth, who is a very hard man to please. So thank you very much to Rob for holding down the fort for us. And I welcome you now for the next 40 minutes or so anyway, at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. You can pick the topics, but I do have a couple of other stories that need to be discussed, including the disgust that I have for the January 6th committee. We talk about January 6th a lot on this program, largely because of the ongoing torture and denial of constitutional rights of some of the political prisoners being held in Washington, D.C. gulags. But now we have something new. We've always known that they will do anything and would do anything humanly possible to stop Donald Trump. We know this. They did it from the moment he came down the escalator. We know it from the phony Russian collusion hoax. We know it through two phony impeachments. We know it through the law fail charges filed against him and so forth. But, you know, the lying, the cheating, and the stealing, which is so par for the course for the Democrats, I don't even know if that covers what they did here. They created, and I talked about this briefly earlier on, if you missed the conversation with Governor Kristi Noem. Seth, is that one up yet, or is that one going to be after the show? That one's up. Governor Kristi Noem joined us in the first hour of the program this morning from South Dakota. She's in town to campaign for Bernie Moreno, who, of course, is locked in that very, very tight Senate race. Governor Noem and I discussed this, and, you know, she's just as outraged against this or at this as I am. The January 6th committee, the select committee that we knew was completely bogus from the moment it was put together because they refused to allow the Republicans to put the members of their choice on this select committee. Because the first two names that were submitted for the committee by the speaker were Jim Jordan, or the minority leader at the time, Jim Jordan and Jim Banks from Ohio, Indiana, respectively. Nancy Pelosi blocked them and said, no, they can't be on it. And the reason why is because they knew that Jim Jordan and Jim Banks would be asking questions that this committee did not want asked and most certainly did not want to have to answer. Nancy Pelosi was not going to allow that, which is why they then withdrew all representation on the committee. So the committee was comprised of all Democrats and two Trump-hating Republicans who were effectively Democrats, including Liz Cheney. The other one is Adam Kinzinger. But the January 6th committee on the riots at the Capitol, and yes, there was a riot at the Capitol. I will definitely grant you that. protests turned into rioting, not necessarily at the behest of the protesters, but because they were attacked by some of the police that were there, and they were incited and spurred on by a bunch of the feds that were there. I don't want to litigate the whole thing right now, except to point out that what happened on January 6th was investigated by this committee that had an agenda, and the agenda was not finding out what happened. The agenda was telling a tale, advancing a narrative, already deciding what happened, and then setting out to have a committee come together and describe and define and to explain how their made-up agenda happened. The point of all of this being, what we have just found out is that they had evidence that proved Donald Trump did not engage in insurrection. They have evidence that proves Donald Trump wanted order at that Capitol. They have evidence that proves Donald Trump tried to make sure there could be no riot and that there could be no insurrection, if even that was even thought of before that. He wanted the National Guard there. He wanted the National Guard there. And he asked for it, and it was rejected. And now we know that the January 6th Select Committee of all Democrats and two Republicans who act like Democrats had that evidence and intentionally buried it because it violated the narrative that Trump was trying to overthrow the government. They wanted to make sure that Donald Trump could never again run for president because he would be blocked and ineligible because of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, that he engaged in insurrection. They knew he didn't engage in insurrection because he ordered the defense against any such insurrection. And they buried it. Here's the story from the Epoch Times. A previously hidden transcript. Did I say they buried it? Hidden transcript of an interview conducted by a U.S. House of Representatives panel that investigated the January 26th breach of the U.S. Capitol has been revealed. Anthony Ornato, who was the White House Deputy Chief of Staff during the breach, told the committee that Mark Meadows, who was then Chief of Staff, on a phone call with Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser, wanted to ensure Ms. Bowser that she had everything that she needed. In fact, Mr. Meadows wanted to know if she needed any more guardsmen. Mr. Ornato testified, according to the newly uncovered or unburied transcript, said, I remember the number 10,000 coming up. 10,000. The president wants to make sure you have enough. You know, he's willing to ask for 10,000. I remember that number. Now that you say it, it reminded me of it. 10,000. Ms. Bowser, Muriel Bowser, said no, she was all set. She rejected the offer of 10,000. Ornato was speaking to the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack, and the committee said in its final report that it, quote, found no evidence supporting the idea that former President Donald Trump ordered 10,000 troops to be ready for January 6th. The former J6 Select Committee apparently withheld Mr. Ornato's critical witness testimony so that they could issue their formal findings that there was no evidence. There was evidence. Eyewitness testimony from Mr. Ornato. Eyewitness that he heard the offer being made to the mayor of New York or mayor of Washington, D.C. Ornato's critical witness testimony from the American people was hidden from the American people because it contradicted their predetermined narrative, said Representative Barry Loudermilk. Ornato's testimony proves what Meadows has said all along. President Trump did, in fact, offer 10,000 National Guard troops to secure the Capitol, which was turned down. January 6th committee, the select committee, had this evidence and intentionally buried it and did not include it in its final report because it would have bucked their narrative. They can't claim that Trump was committing an insurrection, i.e. an overthrow of the government, i.e. a coup d'etat to gain undeserved power. They couldn't prove he was trying to do that if he was ordering the troops that would stop such a thing from happening. So they buried it. Now, this is new evidence. It's not new evidence. This is newly discovered to have been buried evidence. That much we can say for sure. But it's not the first piece of evidence and only piece of evidence. I have brought this up on the program before, and it is something nobody is talking about. Nobody is talking about the lieutenant general who also declared and has declared on multiple occasions that he knew about Trump's 10,000 National Guardsmen request. Everyone is ignoring this as if it never happened. A lieutenant general who has testified to this, who tweeted about this, and in fact, somebody who wrote about it in his in a book. When you've got lieutenant general saying, yes, this happened, I was there. When you've got a deputy chief of staff saying, yes, this was happened, I was there. How can the select committee then say it never happened? Therefore, Trump committed an insurrection. This is beyond the pale. This is so egregious of a violation of every rule of maybe not rule, every shred of integrity that the federal government is supposed to have when investigative bodies are formed, particularly select committees. They're supposed to follow the evidence wherever it leads, not follow their story wherever it wants to go, despite what the evidence says. We'll bury that evidence. And that's exactly what they did. So you've got multiple witnesses testifying to what Donald Trump tried to do to ensure, knowing full well that when he and his supporters went to the Capitol to, what is it? Peacefully and patriotically make their voices heard, not to overthrow the government, not to stop the transfer of power, but to request that Governor Mike Pence not certify the electors until a 10-day audit could be conducted. That's all they wanted was an audit. That's not an insurrection, not by any stretch of the imagination. But knowing that they would be there protesting on behalf of that to peacefully and patriotically make their voices heard, requesting that it would be met by counter-protesters. And counter-protesters, together with protesters about something as important as this, oftentimes leads to violence. So here's Trump and his team, including the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, requesting this security to ensure that the Capitol is protected. Turned down by Muriel Bowser, the mayor. Turned down by Nancy Pelosi, the speaker. And yet now Trump is supposed to be the one who doesn't get to run for president, doesn't get to have his name on a ballot because of his participation in an insurrection. An insurrection that he would have then literally been responsible for stopping had the 10,000 National Guard troops that he had requested been allowed. So there you have it. It's just extraordinarily important to know that the House Select Committee on January 6th intentionally covered up information, intentionally hid exculpatory evidence from the jury that is the American people, not just from the committee, but from the jury that is the American people, the people that are going to decide right now whether or not they want Donald Trump to come back or whether or not they want Joe Biden to continue. They deserve to know the truth. And now we're finding out that truth cannot be found in the halls of Washington, D.C.'s Capitol. Truth can certainly not be found in J6 Select Committee, made up of all Democrats. By the way, and I've said this many times before, to all prosecutors, no defense attorneys. What they have, how many members were on that? 11? I think there were 9 Democrats and 2 Trump-hating Republicans, which means 11 Democrats, all of them prosecuting Trump for January 6th. No one allowed to give a defense. Jordan wasn't allowed on that panel. Banks wasn't allowed on that panel. There was nobody allowed to tell that side of the story, including what we were talking about now, which is why they were able to bury it. Do you think that the evidence I just laid out for you from the deputy chief of staff and the chief of staff, do you think that would have been buried had Jordan been on the committee? Nope, it would have been in the final draft. But because they got rid of them, they were able to make it say what they wanted it to say. It's astounding, and it should be one of the top stories in America right now. The January 6th Select Committee report on January 6th should be run through a paper shredder, and then that paper shredder should be run through a larger paper shredder, because that's what it's worth. Okay, Sally in Berea. Sally, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. We are thrilled to share some good news for a change. The recent election for Mark Robinson, he was able to secure the race to become the governor for North Carolina. And, Bob, every time you play his iconic clip about there's only two genders, we just laugh. It's perfect.
But two genders, ain't nothing but men and women.
That was for you, Sam.
Thank you. It was perfect. And one other quick comment regarding the illegal invaders on our border. They are going against the law. They're breaking the law. They're not legally getting admission. Therefore, they're in good conscience. I will call them illegals. And I also object to people that say they're migrants, people from Middle East, Africa, Asia, South America. Most of them have no intention of returning unless it's for nefarious reasons. They're not migrants. They're invaders. Thanks, Bob.
They are indeed. Thank you, Sally, for the phone call. I appreciate that. No, I'm not afraid to call them what they are as well. Neither is President Donald J. Trump.
You use the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lakin Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke...
Compare that to...
Then just moments ago, I don't know if you heard because you've all been waiting online for 2 days. But just moments ago, this was just before coming up, they just told me prior to what I'm doing right now, that Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Lakin's murderer an illegal. He didn't want to call him illegal. He apologized. He said he should have called him an undocumented, not an illegal, and he wanted to apologize. He wanted to apologize, and... Well, they have a new name, too. They have a new name that's even worse. They have a new name. You know what the new name is? Neighbor. They want to call him Neighbor. They want to call him another name. Did you ever hear the other one? Newcomer. A newcomer to our country. Are we going crazy or what? Is this country going crazy? How about that one? Newcomer. The newcomer. No, he was illegal. And I say he was an illegal alien. He was an illegal immigrant. He was an illegal migrant, and he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy.
Can you dig it?
By the way, you know what my goal is? Honestly, my goal is for President Trump to fire a can you dig it at one of his rallies. That's something that I just think has to happen. One time, just give me one can you dig it at the end of one of Trump's speeches at one of his rallies. John in Chardon. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hey, Bob. About Matt Dillon. He doesn't have the intestinal fortitude or good judgment to stand up against a group that publicly protested the Indian's name. And, I mean, so I wouldn't vote for Matt Dillon.
Well, I hope if Matt Dolan wins this primary and he's running against Sherrod Brown, I hope you will.
Yeah, I suppose I will. But I hope he doesn't make it that far.
Well, you know, as I've said, you know, and I've talked about that issue many, many times on the air, and I've talked about it with Matt Dolan. I do understand the anger about that. I share it. I'm still mad about it. I think there's more to it than what we know. But I am just as livid as you are about it, so it bothers me. But I want everybody who is going to vote in this primary, whether you are a Dolan fan or a LaRose fan or a Marino fan, to know that any one of them will be a damn sight better than what Sherrod Brown is. And we need the majority back. We cannot. You know, I've put it this way many times. And thank you for the call, John. I've put it this way many times. If there is a 100% chance that Sherrod Brown is going to vote with Biden on virtually everything, and there is, and there is only a 1% chance that our guy will vote against Biden and against the left's radical agenda, then I will take that 1% chance. And I think it's probably significantly higher than 1% than Matt Dolan would oppose what Sherrod Brown would do and would oppose what Joe Biden would do. I think it's a significantly higher chance that Frank LaRose, Bernie Moreno, Matt Dolan, any of them would be better than Sherrod Brown. So you don't take the automatic L that you get with a Sherrod Brown. You take a possible W with somebody like one of these other three guys. Again, I wasn't a huge Rob Portman fan. In fact, I was a pretty strong critic of Rob Portman because he was not the conservative vote we needed all of the time. But it was enough of the time that I would rather have him than another Democrat in that seat, right? So let's be smart about this. Whether you think Dolan is the best or LaRose is the best or Moreno is the best between now and next Tuesday, let's hash that out and figure that out between
The Answer. Keeping you informed among the uninformed. Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on The Answer.
You know, I might have to call on a favor from Bernie Moreno. Seth, what do you think? My goal of having a Can You Dig It played at a Trump rally? I think you know, wrapping up one of the most raucous ovations at the end of a rally before the village people is fired, but to fire a Cyrus Can You Dig It? I mean, maybe Trump's endorsed guy might have a little pull with him. What do you think?
If anybody can make it happen, Bernie can make it happen.
Yeah, I think so. Max Miller might be a good source there too. Max Miller has an in with the president, having worked in the White House with him. That's another one. There might be, but we got to find a way to make that happen. I want to hear a Can You Dig It after a massive ovation. And by the way, did you see the ovation he got at the UFC event on Saturday?
That was huge. Oh, got to borrow a word from him, but yeah, that was
incredible. I mean, he knows how to play the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He knows where to, it's called a cheap pop. He knows that the UFC crowd is Trump territory, so anytime they have an event, if he can get to it, he goes in just to hear the roar. I mean, it's not changing any votes because they already love him there. In wrestling terms, they call that a cheap pop. When a wrestler in the town of wherever the event is happening that night, like when WWE Raw or whatever was coming to Cleveland, you know, all they have to do is come in there and just say the name Cleveland, name alone town, and it's an easy, cheap pop. You know you're going to get the crowd to explode if you say their town. Same thing with Trump. He knows that the UFC crowd is his crowd. All he's going to do is show his face, and it's going to be, and then you run that in the news, run that in your ads, run it on social media. Look at all the popularity of President Trump. It's probably the same UFC crowd at virtually every single event, but they love him, and he knows how to milk the hell out of that.
I saw a picture of him and Dana White together online.
Oh, yeah, they're tight. Dana White's a huge supporter. Yeah, they're tight. And by the way, that also explains, this is a little bit off topic, but it kind of explains why Trump pulled back on the Bud Light boycott a little bit, because Dana White did. And Dana White did because Dana White has a big contract with Bud Light for UFC. They're very, very tight. And I guarantee you Dana White asked him if he would kind of join the, hey, let's give Bud White and Anheuser-Busch a break here. And Trump made those comments, which kind of were dismaying to a lot of people, myself included, a few weeks ago. But I think his friendship with Dana White probably led to a little bit of that. But Trump knows how to work that UFC crowd, and I love that he does, because it does. It's invigorating, it's exciting, and it makes us once again show the difference between a Trump rally, or I'm sorry, a Trump crowd. And when's the last time Joe Biden walked into an arena full of people and had 20,000 people stand and scream and cheer at the same time? I mean, honestly, even if there's a scheduled campaign rally, he's not drawing that kind of a crowd, certainly with that kind of enthusiasm. And if it's not a campaign rally, if it's at an event, you know, going to anything, whether it be a sporting event or something else, do you see people greeting Joe Biden with all of that love? No one, anywhere and ever. And I think that just speaks volumes, and it's why they're going to try to rig another election. And, of course, this speaks volumes, too.
Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Lakin's murderer an illegal.
You used the word illegal.
He didn't want to call him illegal.
An undocumented person.
He said he should have called him an undocumented.
And I shouldn't have used illegal. I should have, it's undocumented.
Not an illegal, and he wanted to apologize.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
Well, they have a new name, too. You know what the new name is? Neighbor.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
They want to call him neighbor.
An undocumented person.
They want to call him another name. Did you ever hear the other one? Newcomer.
And I shouldn't have used illegal.
A newcomer to our country.
An undocumented person.
No, he was illegal. And I say he was an illegal alien.
I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect.
He was an illegal immigrant.
An undocumented person.
He was an illegal migrant.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
And he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy.
I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect.
Can you dig it?
What would that crowd do? What would that crowd do in a Trump rally if he fired "Can you dig it" at the end of that? He's got to get the sound guys to do that. Max Miller, anybody who's got Trump's ear, Bernie Moreno, anybody who's got Trump's ear, get that message out there. I would absolutely love that. Joanne is in Twinsburg. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Good morning, Bob. You know, remember a couple weeks I called you after I think you had Chris Vanwag on and said, who the heck am I supposed to vote for here?
I do. Yes.
Well.
And Tanya answered the bell, by the way. Tanya answered the bell. You asked for Tanya to come on because you needed some advice. She came on.
She called the next day. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I got two, I call them cheat sheets. They call them voter guides in the mail. One from the Summit County Republican Party and one from the Republicans of Northeast Ohio PAC. Never heard of those guys before. One endorses Coughlin. One endorses Vanwag. One endorses Frank LaRose. The other one endorses Marino. Several committee men, Summit County Council, all these, they're different on both of these voter guides. When are the Republicans going to get their act together? I mean, this is crazy.
Well, you know, I mean, it's simultaneously, Joanne, a strength and a weakness of the Republican Party. It's a strength that they have,
I guess. I mean,
really,
we have
really,
a bench.
Yeah,
okay.
Really good depth and some real good options. But of course, you know, it does create a weakness as well because, you know, our loyalties are divided a little bit. But that's why I keep saying the same thing. You know, again, I'm not saying they're all identical. They're not just plug and play interchangeable. For example, LaRose and Dolan and Marino. But, you know, pick the one that you like the best, even if you like a lot of them and a lot of things about each of them. Pick the one you like the best, and then regardless of the outcome, make the new one your new favorite as soon as they're up against Sherrod Brown. As long as
beat
the Democrats.
Even in the Senate race, you know, I look at the last Senate race, and I was a Mike Gibson.
Gibbons.
And I mean, J.D. has proved to be a complete win for us. I mean, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised.
J.D. Vance is doing a phenomenal job.
I mean, like you were talking to John and Chardon, and you said you got to vote for any of these three when they're on the ballot.
Yeah, and you know who is one of J.D. Vance's biggest fans in the Senate so far? Mike Gibbons. that should tell you a lot. I mean, seriously,
because I
liked Mike a lot too.
You know, even coming through this one, I mean, even if you vote for Frank LaRose in the primary and it ends up being Bernie Moreno, you can't vote for Sherrod Brown. The guy has done nothing in the 20 years he's been in Washington.
And I don't think any Republican, and thank you for the call, Joanne, I don't think any Republican in this primary vote is going to vote for Sherrod Brown. It's just a question of whether or not they'll be inspired enough to go vote at all. In the general, because they made their guy lost. If you're a Marino fan and you think, man, I don't like the idea of Dolan at all, he's too Portman-like, and you don't go vote for Dolan, then you are hurting this country. I am committed to supporting any one of them because we need the majority in the U.S. Senate. It is that important. Steve in Collinwood. Steve, go ahead. I've got 1 minute for you.
Yeah, they're going to build this pier in Gaza.
That's what he wants.
Do you think it'll have a Ferris wheel? You know.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.